The idea is to stabilize Alaska's income stream and protect Alaskans.
A Senate bill to use permanent fund earnings for state government. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, April 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a story of success for the Ketchikan Shipyard.
This is unbelievable what you guys are doing, and this is makes me an optimist.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Public Media is seeking donations for our 2016 Big Alaska Statewide TV Travel Auction to be held on May 19th and 20th. We're looking for trips, accommodations, activities, and adventures. Your generous donation will help us in our commitment to growth and excellence in programming on Alaska Public Media. There's more information online on our events page on our website at alaskapublic.org.
Potential changes to the permanent fund became clearer today. The Senate Finance Committee introduced a bill that would pay for much of the state government's budget using the fund's earnings. It would also reduce residents' permanent fund dividends, but make them more stable for the future. APRN's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
The bill could be the basis for moving the state government away from a decades-long dependence solely on new oil revenue. Senate Bill 128, which is based on Governor Bill Walker's proposal, would pay about $2.5 billion from the permanent fund toward the budget, rising to $3 billion in 8 years. It wouldn't completely close the budget gap, but it would reduce state draws on the budget reserves enough that Senate Finance Committee co-chairwoman Eagle River Republican Anna McKinnon believes it would put the state on sounder financial footing.
I do think that we can come together on this portion, this leg of the journey, in helping the creditors that are watching Alaska. I think this is a huge step forward. We diversify our revenue stream by almost 40% under this proposal.
Dividend checks would be $1,000 for the next 3 years, and similar amounts after that. Walker has pointed out that without changes to current law, the checks could disappear in as little as 3 years. Legislative Finance Director David Teal says the bill would increase the state's financial stability. The deficit would fall from more than $3 billion this year to less than $500 million in 6 years.
Reserve balance is slightly lower, but your deficit is so much lower that your glide path is much better under this bill than under the current, the status quo.
The key feature of the bill is that it would pay out 5.25% of the fund's market value toward the state. Of that amount, 20% would be devoted to dividends, with the rest going to the budget. In addition, about 15% of oil royalties would also support dividends. Revenue Commissioner Randall Hoffbeck was cautiously positive toward the bill, saying it gives the administration and legislature something to work with.
We have a mechanism now for using the earnings reserve, and that's a major step forward, and we're excited to start working on it.
Wasilla Republican Senator Mike Dunleavy says he thinks the latest bill shouldn't be the final word on the state government's finances. He wants a legal limit on spending.
This is the opportunity to really take advantage of it and put some brakes on our desire to spend. I've probably heard 1,000 different reasons why we should spend more money, even though we're at this point $4 billion less revenue than we've had in the past.
McKinnon says the bill is the result of months of work by legislative staff. She wants it to be something that will draw support in the legislature and from Walker without relying on an income tax.
We're looking for consensus in both bodies as well as with the administration. The idea is to stabilize Alaska's income stream and protect Alaskans.
The Senate Finance Committee plans to hold a hearing on the bill tomorrow. Both houses have until the scheduled end of the session on Sunday, April 17th to pass the bill. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Two hikers who were stranded on a glacier on the southern Kenai Peninsula since Friday night were rescued by crews with the Alaska Air National Guard just after noon today. A spokesman for the Alaska Rescue Coordination Center at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage says 36-year-old Jennifer Nyman of Wrangell and 45-year-old Christopher Hanna of Soldotna were released to medical personnel at Central Peninsula Hospital in Soldotna and are both reported to be in good condition. Bad weather and difficult terrain hampered efforts to find the two for 3 days. But last night, four Alaska Air National Guard rescuers were delivered by helicopter onto the glacier and camped overnight, then set out and found the hikers. The Ketchikan shipyard had a reputation in the 1980s and 90s as a giant money pit. The state spent millions to build it, and critics complained it couldn't do cost-effective repairs. Operators lost money, the yard closed for 2 years. Then, with big infusions of state and federal cash, along with local support, the yard got going again. It now provides 200 year-round jobs and is building two major new ferries for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Today, shipyard executive Doug Ward spoke at a U.S. Senate hearing about what he hopes will be the yard's new reputation as a model of workforce development for modern manufacturing. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Forget the grease-stained coveralls. When Ward describes the workers at the Ketchikan shipyard, he talks about multi-skilled employees who are furthering their education.
It is no longer a dirty, grubby job. Almost every production phase in the shipyard has become so technically advanced that it takes a minimum of the equivalent of a 2-year associate degree to become a productive entry-level worker.
Ward says the yard has partnerships with high schools, colleges, and tribal organizations to develop a talent pipeline and educate its workers. He says it takes investment from all sectors, public, private, and philanthropic, to build a globally competitive workforce. And Ward says the workers' education should continue on-site to suit the workers' needs and the evolving demands.
I think those of us that have respect for the frontline worker and begin to treat the frontline worker as a fixed asset with a 30-year lifespan, and if we as society can provide the educational tools and training tools for them to take advantage of the technology that we have available, that we will be back certainly in the shipbuilding world as competitive as any nation in the world.
Ward was on a panel to discuss advanced manufacturing, along with a Boeing executive and the president of the Council on Competitiveness. They clearly won over Senator Al Franken, a Minnesota Democrat.
This is unbelievable what you guys are doing, and this is makes me an optimist.
Disbelief certainly plagued the Ketchikan shipyard for years. But now the yard is building two big state ferries, thanks to a $100 million non-competitive award. They will be the largest ships ever built in Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski acknowledged her pride for Ketchikan.
If you were to have told people in the Ketchikan area that in our little shipyard we would be taking on building the Alaska-class ferry project, if you had made this statement some 20 years ago, they would have said, that's pie in the sky. We can't build ships like that. That all happens down south. And we've changed that dynamic.
The yard is owned by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and operated by Vigor, a for-profit company in the Pacific Northwest. The Ketchikan operation has benefited from substantial public investment both to create the shipyard and to develop the workforce. Ward says shifting from ship repair to ship building was key to the yard's stability.
Ship repair is very uncertain. You never know what you're going to find when you begin opening and inspecting systems on a ship. Compared to ship building, where you have a complete set of plans drawn out in detail, and you have time to develop a build strategy and put that plan into effect. It's much more organized than ship repair.
Ward says the ferry project is about 25% complete, and they expect to deliver the first ship in 2018. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Delta Airlines decides on summer-only flights to Juneau.
Candidly, it's been poor. And yet we know that, folks are traveling.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Commercial, sport, subsistence, personal use. Some hear these labels and think conflict. The Salmon Project sees connections. Join 10,000 Alaskans whose lives are connected by Alaska's salmon. Visit salmonlife.org to experience the stories. And find the Salmon Project on Facebook to join the community. Salmon Life, Salmon Love. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
The Senate Finance Committee has released its first version of the capital budget, which tracks closely to the governor's plan with a few notable exceptions. The total amount is just under $80 million, according to a staffer for Finance Co-Chair Senator Anna McKinnon, a Republican from Eagle River. That figure pales in comparison to capital spending under the Parnell administration, when high oil prices funded a capital budget above $2 billion. One departure from the governor's plan is $32.5 million set aside for the purchase of the Legislative Information Office in downtown Anchorage. Developer Mark Pfeffer says he's willing to sell at that price, even though it represents a $4.5 million loss for the building's owners.
We've indicated that conceptually we're okay with that price, but of course it depends upon all the other details associated with a sale.
Much like the governor's version, Senate Finance did not include money for large-scale infrastructure projects. $1.6 million is marked for design work on an Arctic deep-draft port in Nome, but there's no mention of the Kinnick Arm Bridge, Susitna-Wautana Dam, or Ambler Mining District. There's also no money for improvements to the Port of Anchorage, which a recent report called a slow-motion disaster because of severe corrosion problems. The Berkowitz administration made the port its single funding request to the legislature. Spokesperson Meyer Hutchinson says while it's disappointing, the administration is optimistic.
It's always interesting at the end of session to see what the legislature chooses to prioritize in the end. It seems like they've had time to find $32.5 million for an information office building, and we're hopeful that they will have time to provide some funds to secure a port that serves 80% of Alaska's population for the next 75 years.
The Berkowitz administration is asking that the $290 million request be part of a general obligation bond package presented to voters in the November elections. If you live in Juneau and you're planning a trip to Seattle after August, the price of plane tickets may go up. Delta Airlines is stopping all flights to Juneau next fall to return in May of 2017. As KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins reports, the airline competition has meant hot ticket prices, but Delta says the community's reception has been chilly so far.
If you booked a flight between September to January through Delta, your chances of arriving in Seattle late were about 4 out of 10, according to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. That's about three times Alaska Airlines rate. But Delta's vice president in Seattle, Mike Medeiros, says that's not the reason the airline decided to stop its fall and winter flights.
Had nothing to do with weather. It's purely commercial, nothing to do with the operation.
He says at least on the Seattle side, ticket sales were good. But in Juneau,
candidly, it's been poor. And yet we know that, folks are traveling. And it takes really both points of sale for a market to be successful.
For about 20 years, Alaska Airlines held a monopoly as Juneau's only major airline provider. Delta arrived on the scene in the summer of 2014. Then last year, the company announced year-round service to Juneau. With the increased competition, ticket prices plummeted, sometimes by half. Medeiros says he knows the community was appreciative.
However, while they're appreciative of lower fares, local residents really haven't supported Delta in a way that's, that we really need them in order to continue the service.
So he thinks Delta dipped its big toe into somewhat tepid water. But travel analyst Scott McMurrin says it's not uncommon for airlines to operate seasonally in Alaska. He says look at larger hubs like Anchorage.
Airlines like Condor and Iceland Air and JetBlue and Sun Country. These people only come in, Air Canada is another one, only come in during the summer, you know, in May, and then they leave in September.
For the consumer, the downside to all this means ticket sales could fluctuate dramatically. McMurrin thinks prices will spike after August 31st, when Alaska Airlines goes back to being the city's only major airline provider, at least for the season.
And the reason I think that is because that's what happens in Sitka and Ketchikan after Delta stops flying there.
After August, he estimates ticket prices could jump between 50 to 100%. Delta's Seattle VP, Mike Medeiros, says Alaska Airlines is what's familiar to the customer base. But he's not sure why Juneau hasn't been more receptive to the competition.
There's an extreme loyalty factor in the state of Alaska because that's all they've had.
And at least next fall and winter, one major airline is all there will be. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Two large shipping containers, each stamped with the words, "Contains guided missile," were discovered bobbing in the Pacific Ocean near the southeast island community of Craig. Alaska State Troopers say both were empty, and information from tags attached to the boxes was sent to U.S. military authorities. Troopers were investigating the discovery of one suspicious box on Sunday when they got a radio message from a mariner that another one showed up. Troopers say an explosives ordnance team helped determine the boxes were void of their original contents. Troopers didn't know any history of the containers. The Kenaitse Indian Tribe recently opened their new Elder Center near their Denaina Wellness Center in the heart of Old Town Kenai. Officials say it's part of a larger strategy to restore the tribe's original village site and bring better services to tribal members and other Alaska Natives and American Indians living in the area. KBBI's Daisha Eaton has more.
The high-ceilinged multi-purpose room has a wall of windows overlooking the Kenai River and the tribe's traditional fishing grounds. The interior, in hues of chartreuse, tan, and teal, matches the colors outside of the trees, beaches, and the water that flows in the Kenai River. And that's intentional, says Shayna Frankie, the manager of Chaka's Elder Center with the Kenaitse Indian Tribe in Kenai.
We got together with our architect and kind of told her what we wanted, and they came up with a couple of displays, and the elders actually had an opportunity to choose out what they wanted to see for the building.
A remnant of blonde wood from the old Kenai fish cannery serves as a mantle over the fireplace in the main room. There's also a library, a commercial kitchen, and offices. The building can hold over 100 and serves as a hub for transportation, meals, advocacy, and activities for Alaska Native and American Indian people 55 and over. Frankie says the center has needed a new space for a long time.
In our old building, we got shut down because there was some maintenance issues and it became a hazard for our elders to be in. So we shut it down, moved out really quickly, jumped over there and started operating out of that center, Fort Kenai. And then we started construction on this one.
The Elder Center, which was built with funds from the Indian Health Service, opened in March. It's part of their development of the Kenaitse campus in Old Town Kenai. That also includes the Denaina Wellness Center, which opened in 2014, and a social services building, as well as their new tribal court, plus a new property they acquired in March that has a building on it, which will soon house their environmental and security offices. Jaylene Peterson-Nyrene is executive director for Kenaitse Indian Tribe. She says taking care of elders is a core Native value, so the project was a high priority for the tribe.
I like to say that we are all elders in the making when you really think about it.
Peterson-Nyrene says it's part of a plan for the tribe to be more proactive and visible.
The Denaina people on their land here on the Kenai Peninsula really became invisible in a way with all of the outside influence and other peoples coming in. And what we've tried to do is really partner well with the community and to really show that we are here. And I think that we've had a lot of success in partnering locally with the state and federal programs and services.
Peterson-Nyrene says the development of the Kenaitse campus creates a sense of community that is both practical and also symbolic.
Old Town Kenai was one of the original village sites. There were many village sites with many different names and locations around the Kenai Peninsula. This was a space that was primarily a summer camp, but it was also where the tribal members had permanent dwellings. And this was one of the original village sites where folks fish down in the dipnet fishery.
Retired school teacher Mary Lou Batoroff sits at a table in the main hall looking through a book of Alaska history, much of which she was present for. Batoroff says she's been coming to the tribe's elder center in Kenai for about 20 years in the older buildings, and she says she loves the new space.
Well, it's a very roomy, airy, very bright. The colors are they're easy on the eye. Beautiful library. And there's more new elders coming in now that have never come here before. I notice that they're starting to $2 a meal. Can't beat that.
Nearby, William Segura is deep into his crossword puzzle.
I go by William mostly, but here they call me Bill.
Segura, who once worked in the local fishery, says he was born 71 years ago, across the street from where the new Elder Center now stands. So it feels like home. He says he's there for the socializing.
We never had nothing like this before, you know. I like it. I like to visit. I'm what you call the blabbermouth.
The elders had always advised the tribal council that they would like to return to the site in Old Kenai, says Peterson-Nyrene.
We coined a phrase when we moved into the Denaina Wellness Center, and the term in Denaina is Nakanturaros. Nakanturaros means that the tide has been going out and away from us for many, many years, including our people and our culture, and now the tide has turned and is coming back into us. We are coming back to ourselves in this space, in this time.
A grand opening celebration for the Kenaitse tribe's new elder center is planned for June. In Kenai, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Through generous APU scholarship packages and the new APU Promise Tuition Grant Program, APU is a sound educational investment in your future. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The Togiak Tribal Council has rolled out the not welcome mat to a Dillingham man they say has been importing alcohol and drugs into the community. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
This is the second time in a year that the Togiak tribe has banished an individual from the village. Last fall, local air carriers were informed that the first of them, a 23-year-old from Dillingham, was no longer welcome in Togiak, and on Friday, letters went out that the second had been banished as well. He, a brother to the first, is 26 years old, also from Dillingham. The tribe has decided not to publicly release the men's names. Jimmy Kupchayak is the traditional council president.
I think we need to do this to protect our future children and our elders because they're vulnerable. It's been getting worse, and we're saying enough is enough.
Local airlines confirmed that the tribe had asked them not to allow either of these brothers passage to the village. Because the allegations of drug and alcohol importation are not based on state criminal complaints or filed in open court, KDLG has withheld their names from this report. Banishments from tribal lands in Alaska are uncommon but not unheard of and appear to be of renewed interest as communities wrestle with the epidemic of heroin and meth use. Helen Gregorio is the Togiak Tribal Court Clerk.
It's rare, but we are exercising our sovereign authority as a federally recognized tribe.
Gregorio says banishment begins with a petition to the tribe, which then meets with the three-judge panel of the tribal court. Once the banishment order has been signed, the tribe says its police force will arrest the men if they set foot on their tribal lands. One has been banished for life, the most recently banished for the next 10 years. Kupchayak says right now they're considering more petition cases, these involving actual tribal members who live in Togiak.
A tribal member we have the authority to revoke their membership in our tribal membership.
Officials in Togiak, a dry village, say the amount of hard drugs and alcohol coming in has spiked dramatically in the past 2 years, which they blame in part on direct cargo flights from Anchorage and a lack of enforcement. They say they're asking state and federal governments for help, hoping for funding and expanded jurisdiction for their tribal police and court. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
The Alaska Department of Transportation announced yesterday that May sailings of the ferry Tustamina are canceled due to unexpected repair work. The ferry's first 2016 trip servicing the Aleutian chain will now depart about 2 weeks late. Tustamina sailings from May 15th through the 26th are canceled. The ferry is expected to return to service for the season on Friday, May 27th. DOT spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the cancellations were unfortunate.
This is the second year in a row that we've had to cancel the first chain run due to what's called discovery work during the vessel's annual overhaul.
Woodrow says every time the department sends the vessel to the shipyard for an annual inspection or capital improvement project, they ask the shipyard to do a comprehensive tune-up.
Unfortunately, this time when they were doing discovery work, they found some steel in the car deck area that needs to be repaired, and the extent of the repairs are going to take longer than was scheduled for the vessel's overhaul.
He says there's no chance of the repairs being completed earlier.
They do schedule space for those discovery repairs. The extent of these repairs are going to take much longer, unfortunately, than that was scheduled. And there's no way that the vessel can be certified by the Coast Guard for safety for the passengers before these repairs are made.
Alaska Marine Highway System representatives will contact ticket holders for the canceled sailings this week to either arrange itinerary changes or refunds. Woodrow says passengers who have made connecting travel arrangements are out of luck.
It doesn't compensate passengers for any other reservations made or penalties they may incur with their other means of travel.
The revised sailing schedules and other information will be posted on the Marine Highway website. The first ferry to Dutch Harbor isn't expected until the beginning of June. Finally tonight, we have a correction for a story we ran last night about community revenue sharing. Anchorage would receive $5.7 million in the fiscal year starting in July under bills the legislature is considering. It would receive up to $2.3 million in future years. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Daisha Eaton in Homer, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and Greta Mart in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettisworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.